Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Around here, we're still feeling really, really good about life after Georgia's 21-14 win against Auburn on Saturday, clinching the SEC East for the Bulldogs for a third straight year. And if you go to ESPN.com and look at their playoff tracker, the Bulldogs' odds of making the playoff, and y'all know I have absolutely no idea how all this math stuff is calculated, but nonetheless, the Dogs' odds of making the college football playoffs have now exceeded 40%. So we are sitting kind of pretty here as we head towards the true stretch run of the season, leading up to the SEC championship game. However, I am also interested in the college football playoff top 25 announcement tonight. Now, what I'm about to tell you, I don't believe will happen. I'm simply saying it should happen. I believe that Georgia should move ahead of Clemson and be number 3 in the college football playoff top 25 when it's announced tonight. Now, you may say, well, B.A., that doesn't matter. You know, rankings don't matter right now. It's just about being in the playoff, and it'll all work itself out. It'll all sort itself out. But that's not necessarily true, given, and I've explained this a million times, I'm going to keep saying it, given the nature of the two playoff games this year, one in Arizona, one in the friendly confines of the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, obviously Georgia would rather play a playoff game in its own state. And I believe the way in which Georgia could possibly move up now makes it easier when it's all said and done as a one-loss SEC champion to make some sort of viable case to be the number one overall seed. Now, to do that, Georgia probably needs a little bit of help. You need Ohio State to lose at some point in time, because if the Buckeyes went out, just given their overall resume, they'll have a pretty strong case for being number one overall. I certainly get that. So you need some help from them to the tune of a loss. But you shouldn't need any help from Clemson at all, because the fact that Clemson has a zero in the loss column, I believe, should matter very little in comparisons between Georgia and the Tigers here, because of what Georgia has now done, adding Auburn on the road to a list of pretty impressive resume-boosting wins. Let me give you this quick comparison. Based on last week's CFP Top 25, where Clemson was third, Georgia was fourth, but based on the other teams in the rankings, look at Georgia's wins in comparison to Clemson. Georgia has 3 wins against the top 25 right now. Florida, Notre Dame, and adding Auburn on the road on Saturday. Compare that to Ohio State, which has just 2, but as I said before, Ohio State's got the kind of schedule the rest of the way that if they keep winning, they're going to take care of their own business. Even I have to admit that. Auburn, I should say LSU, also probably deservedly ahead of Georgia for the moment. Florida, Auburn, Alabama, Texas, they've beaten all those teams. That's why Georgia needs to beat LSU head-to-head. But look at these other teams, though, specifically the one we're talking about now. Clemson, no wins against the current top 25, although A&M may enter this week. Oregon, currently no wins against the top 25, and Alabama much the same way. So when you're comparing Georgia to some other one-loss teams and the undefeated team ahead of it right now, Clemson, it's pretty clear from that standpoint that Georgia has a better resume from something that the committee cites all the time, the presence of top 25 wins. Georgia has a lot more of those than a lot of these other teams is competing with, including an undefeated team here, Clemson, which has just played a very weak schedule. To kind of go into some more detail about just how weak it's been, let me read you a couple words here from Bill Connelly, ESPN.com. Now, to be fair, the sentences that I'm about to read to you came in a piece defending Clemson and touting Clemson as having a pretty impressive performance here as of late based on Connelly's own numbers. He's a bit of a math guy. But I think these words, though, do stand to kind of bolster our argument that when it comes to a side-by-side comparison between Georgia and Clemson, the fact that Clemson's undefeated and Georgia has one loss, to me that doesn't mean a whole lot here at all. What Connelly writes about Clemson and the conference that it plays in, he says, the ACC is only slightly better than the AAC this year. That's the American Athletic Conference. The conference has schools like Tulane and Memphis and Cincinnati, etc. He says it's only slightly better, if at all, than the AAC. Per SP Plus, which is the number system that he has invented and created, he says the second best team in the ACC is 6-4 Miami. And the Coastal champion will likely be either number 39 Virginia, that's according to his numbers, or number 44 Virginia Tech. He says the Clemson Tigers have played only one team currently ranked in the SP Plus top 40. He says compare that to Georgia, which has played 5, LSU, which has played 4, Ohio State, which has played 4, Alabama, which has played 3, Penn State, which has played 4, Oregon, which has played 4, Oklahoma, which has played 3, and Utah, even, which has played 3. Once again, that's Bill Connelly from ESPN. So here's the point we're trying to make. that the debate for the playoff, assuming Georgia keeps winning, and obviously it's got to do that against Texas A&M on Saturday, Georgia Tech to close out the regular season, and then the big showdown against the SEC championship in the SEC championship against likely LSU, which will be the biggest win at that Georgia has collected all season long if it's able to get that. So obviously Georgia's got a certain end of its own deal that's got to keep up here, but if it does, I think it's fair to start comparing Georgia's resume, what it's putting together, next to some of these other teams. And the fact that Clemson is undefeated ultimately when it's all said and done should not necessarily mean a whole heck of a lot. I believe the geography is going to play a big role in who wins the national championship this year. If one of these teams from the Deep South gets a chance to play the Peach Bowl in Atlanta and then move on to the national championship game, which is only going to be played in New Orleans, I think that's a huge advantage. And the idea that Georgia has disqualified itself from that advantage because it's lost a game, the recent college football playoff history suggests that's not necessarily true. We've seen bad losses from national champions before, and as I said last week, the moment Georgia goes on the road to Auburn and collects another big win, I think it renders that South Carolina loss for the most part irrelevant. That's the spot where we are right now. Georgia has a bad loss, but a bad loss that it no longer needs to apologize for because of the number of good wins that it's collecting. Do I expect the committee to honor this tonight and move Georgia up to number 3 and Clemson down to number 4? No, I probably don't. That's probably just a little too much outside-the-box thinking from them. But do I think they should do that? Is that the fair thing to do? It absolutely is. Absolutely, Georgia has a better resume than Clemson right now, and as long as Georgia keeps winning, that's going to continue to be true. And the race for that spot in the Peach Bowl is going to matter, and I'm very curious to see where it all shakes out and where Georgia is included in all of this when the season finally comes to an end. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Pella Window and Door. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us, no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we're available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you with us here today, and as I said before, we're brought to you by our friends at Pella Window and Door. You know, Pella Window and Door of Georgia can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors, and they provide fantastic customer service. It is a national company, but they have a locally owned branch, family owned right here in the state of Georgia. That means you get that exceptional service. And here's the other thing too. This time of year when you get the heat on your house and you know that energy is kind of being pumped throughout the house, the last thing you want is this escaping out the crevices of the sides of less than efficient windows and doors. That's why my friends at Pella Window and Door can actually end up saving you money when you install in your house doors and windows that not only look great from the outside, increase the curb appeal of your house, but also potentially save your money on your energy bill there as well. So let me give you a couple ways to get in touch. You can find them online at PellaSoutheast.us. That's PellaSoutheast.us. Or you can give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom and set up a few appointment times for them to come out and see you at 404-445-2979. The number, once again, 404-445-2979. That gets you in touch with Pella Window and Door of Georgia. They are viewed to be the best. All right, let's go around the doghouse here for a moment before we talk to Jeff Sintel about some UGA recruiting stuff coming up here in a moment. And so yesterday on the program, I kind of made the case for what I was calling hashtag best for last, where I kind of made the case of these Georgia seniors and the possible juniors who are also many of which, some of which, going to play their final home game at Sanford Stadium on Saturday. They deserve your best if you're going to be in the stadium for what will be their last home game. We kind of talked about the hashtag best for last. Couple problems here, at least in the early going of me trying to real build some real momentum for this. First of all, I probably should have investigated the hashtag a little bit more before I used it. Apparently best for last, like a prom thing. So if you look at the hashtag best for last, you see a lot of like prom pictures and things like that of just like these random people. But the honest truth is, this is not a promotional thing where I'm trying to, you know, Dog Nation Daily doesn't gain anything from us doing this. I'm really trying to do this for the seniors and the juniors playing their last game. I want this for them. I want the best atmosphere, not just of the season for Sanford Stadium, maybe the best atmosphere of the Kirby Smart era, maybe the best atmosphere of all time for a Georgia team kind of coming off an emotional win against Auburn, coming back home to play what I believe is a really good opponent, for the seniors and the final game juniors who have meant so much to this Georgia program, an incredible atmosphere to kind of send them off and send them towards the rest of the season. To me, that just sounds really, really appropriate. The other problem, in addition to the fact that I didn't probably investigate the hashtag as well as I could have, I guess right now there's a pretty significant chance of rain on Saturday in Athens, maybe like up to 90% maybe before the game. Hopefully it kind of calms down by the time you get to the 3:30 kickoff. We got a little bit of weather to deal with. We're going to keep a positive thought on that and assume that clears up and assume that's a great opportunity for folks to fill Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium on Saturday and make a ton of noise for Rodrigo Blankenship and all of these other Georgia seniors who will be doing it for the last time on Saturday. And when Kirby Smart met with reporters yesterday, as you might imagine, in addition to apologize for expletives, the subject of Senior Day came up, and the seniors in particular that'll be playing their final home game and what they've meant to Smart and what they've meant to this Georgia program overall. And Smart was characteristically eloquent while speaking about it. Here's Kirby on the seniors.
Just proud of everything they've meant to our program. I mean, some of those seniors are part of our first class, but a few of those, I don't know how many, were still the Tay Crowders and Mike Barnett's were already here. So it's a unique group. It's the first group that we've had for 4 years. I'm happy for them. I want them to be able to enjoy the moment, but also understand that there's a very emotional game following up. When you have the senior day, it's always an interesting dynamic for those guys because they go out and have a different routine before the game. But they meant so much to this program, and just want them to know that our university and our alumni will be here for them forever, regardless of where they go on to, that we're going to be able to help them and their dogs for life.
Kirby mentions the emotional game that'll follow senior night. I want to come back to that here for a moment, but the idea of the diverse makeup of this class, some guys that Kirby inherited, some guys that Kirby recruited for the first time will be saying goodbye to seniors in Athens on Saturday that Kirby recruited, and a whole host of guys that kind of ended up in this program, you know, sort of various different ways. One of those is a Georgia transfer, or graduate transfer tight end Eli Wolf, who is also going to be walking through the senior night festivities on Saturday, and I thought Wolf had a really nice way of saying this, not just for his own situation, but maybe I think embodying the way a lot of these seniors feel about this, about what seems like, at least to my eyes, watching these guys play every single Saturday, a special connection they all seem to have with each other. Here's what Eli Wolf said on that subject yesterday.
So I'll walk with my parents. This will be my senior night too. And I know I've only been here a year, but they took me in like family, so it's going to be an exciting moment for me.
I mean, I think that's a really classy thing to say. He says, listen, I've technically already graduated college. I graduated from Tennessee, but I've been here a year, and these guys have taken me in. We kind of all feel like family, and I don't think that you can have a truly winning team that kind of pushes through adversity and responds to challenges unless there is a certain kind of family connection the players have with each other. So the idea that Wolf feels that way and proud to walk with his parents on senior night in honor of that makes, I think, all the sense in the world. That's one of the reasons why I think the Georgia fans ought to be looking to create an incredible atmosphere for these guys on Saturday, not just the seniors, but maybe the juniors, who some of which we don't know who's coming back and who's not, but we can assume that some of them won't be, making an incredible atmosphere for all of them, because this has been a special group. This has been a group that has provided leadership. This has been a group that's provided a high level of play on the field, but the intangible qualities of this, I think, is so important. One of the guys that has embodied that really seemingly perfectly during his Georgia career is J.R. Reed. Another guy that kind of ended up at UGA in less than a conventional situation, but became really one of the top players on the defensive side of the ball that Kirby Smart's had. I want to play you a clip from Reed here for a moment as well, because I think what he said Saturday after the win against Auburn and kind of the place that Georgia goes from here, I think it's the perfect snapshot of the kind of leadership this 2016 senior class has been providing, or 2019 guys who came in as part of the 2016 class, but 2019 seniors have been providing the entire time they've been on campus. Here's J.R. Reed, I think, demonstrating what true senior leadership is all about.
It feels good, man. You know, a bunch of guys, it's a new team every year, a bunch of guys buying in. You had to come here and you had to fight. You know, you had to go get this one. You had to take it.
Does it mean anything to you guys in this program?
You know, it means the world to me. You know, my senior year winning SEC East, but we got a lot more work to do. You know, it doesn't stop here.
You know, that's the kind of leadership those guys have been showing for a long time. It's the kind of leadership that ought to be honored with an incredible atmosphere on Saturday, but also kind of pivot back to what Kirby Smart said a moment ago, that this is a little bit different kind of senior night, because you're not playing a 3-win Georgia Tech team or some sort of, you know, sister of the poor cupcake the way a lot of SEC teams are this upcoming Saturday. You're playing Texas A&M, who very well could be a ranked opponent in the College Football Playoff Top 25 tonight, and then, you know, obviously setting up a slightly more high-profile game for Saturday. That means that Georgia, after the senior night festivities or senior day festivities, has to have its game face on. I think the crowd can really help with that. So we're going to keep pushing this hashtag best for last thing of Georgia fans showing off their best attitude, best atmosphere, best you know, loudest noise, loudest environment to really send these seniors off on a great note and really set the tone after all the pageantry of Senior Day is over with, just how intense and important the game is that follows after that. And I no doubt know that Georgia fans will show up and show out in a very big way against Texas A&M on Saturday. Now, if you can't be there, you live around the country, let me tell you about my friends at UGA Alumni Association here for a moment, because the UGA Alumni Association is here for you during football season. Obviously, you're passionate. You want to get to know other UGA fans who kind of feel just as strongly and passionately as you do. Well, that's what UGA Alumni Chapters can help you do. There are more than 80 of these stretched across the country. I'm talking about for 324,000 alumni. When you get together for one of these game-watching parties, not only do you have a good time watching the game, but you can also connect kind of a professional networking sense, or just, you know, find out about community service projects that may be going on with other UGA graduates. It's just a really good chance to get to know better people who really kind of have a similar background to you and that they are UGA grads, much like you are. So let me give you a website to go to, and you can find out about a game-watching party with the UGA Alumni Association in a chapter very close to you. It's alumni.uga.edu/game-watching. That site, once again, alumni.uga.edu/game-watching. I've actually heard from people who've been a part of these great events, and they say that they've made some real true friends by doing this, and they've become even more connected to their alma mater. So check that website out, alumni.uga.edu/game-watching. All right, it's great to have you with us. It's Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door. We'll have more from Kirby Smart on Texas A&M a little later on in our show, but it's also very busy when it comes to UGA recruiting. So without further ado, let's talk to Jeff Sintel as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And we will say hello to a Jeff Sintel here and get ready to talk to him about a bunch of stuff going on with UGA recruiting. A lot of guys making some announcements, some guys apparently having some trouble deciding what they want to do, and a whole lot to cover with Jeff Sintel when it comes to that. So let's get ready to talk about that right now. Jeff, hope you're doing well. Appreciate you being with us here today as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update.
Hey, Brandon. Hey, good morning, man. We say this a lot over the last month, man, but, geez, just one game left in Sanford this weekend. Where has all the Dog Nation coverage gone?
Yeah, no doubt. It's going to be a big one on Saturday. Also a big one from a recruiting standpoint. We'll kind of get to that here coming up in just a moment. And also, we have announcements on the horizon. Five-star defensive lineman Jordan Burch let it be known yesterday that he's got his commitment date set during the early signing period there on December the 19th. And he has been one of the more, is the right word, mercurial here, you know, more difficult prospects to follow because he just doesn't talk a whole lot, doesn't tip his hand in his thought process very much. You can follow visits. He's been to Georgia a good bit. He's been to other schools elsewhere seemingly recently. Any insight to give us on Jordan Burch now that we now know officially for sure when he'll be announcing his commitment decision?
Well, he's going to do it on the second day of the early signing period, Brandon. So I know for you, who loves news cycles and shows and things to talk about, well, there'll be a busy first day flurry of signings, and then I guess that second day around Dog Nation would be wait and watch and wonder day for Jordan Burch. I know everybody wonders about what the young man's doing. This is simply a news vortex. He does no media. A lot of people close to him really don't even know where he's going to go. A lot of people in his school circle doesn't even know where he's wants to go. I think it's interesting that he's going to lock it down and make his decision. I wonder if he's going to commit or commit and sign on that date because his school does not allow him the chance to enroll early. So that would give him, he could take until February if he wanted to, Brandon. So for some folks out there that wish these recruiting timelines would march at a hurry-up offense-type pace, this one right here, which has shown all the potential to have some molasses dripping all over it, looks like the commitment's going to take place in December.
Yeah, so you're saying commitment in December. You obviously raised the question of, does that include a signing? You know, I couldn't help but notice in the tweet that he showed, he did have, like, the pen emoji on there. One would hope that he would put ink down one way or another because, unless it's not Georgia, I guess, then Georgia fans will hope it's just a commitment. I mean, best guess here, does it end for him on December 19th, or do you think it continues on?
I think it ends for him, actually. I just can't say that with any certainty because
I understand.
Anything could happen. But the thing is I don't know why a young man would wait until December to make this commitment and do it during the early signing period and not sign during that time. Now, this is a young man that probably by that time will have had enough recruiting fatigue. He's already knocked off two of his official visits. He's likely to take his official visit to Georgia in December. So that might be just the way for him to find some finality to it. And again, that's the number two prospect in the country. Now, a lot of you guys that focus on the ratings and rankings and the star values or whatever, that's the best prospect left on the board ratings-wise, that Georgia is in it for and could potentially sign in 2020.
Well, let's be real about this too, Jeff. I mean, I've always said that one of the reasons why I could assume that Birch was being really silent about his recruitment, despite maybe in addition to the fact that he just wants to be, is the fact that living in Columbia, South Carolina, if you're not going to South Carolina, you probably maybe feel motivated to kind of keep that quiet because he's probably getting a lot of pressure in that regard, especially given the fact, and we'll talk more about this later on the show, that there's kind of seeming mounting pressure on Will Muschamp, and the idea of him being on the hot seat does not seem to be going away right now. It seems to only be increasing, at least a little bit. Some of the attempts to kind of quiet that down in Columbia haven't exactly worked. So given the fact that Muschamp's trying to save his job, no better way to save your job than by bringing in another five-star defensive lineman. So I am sure that Burge, even though I don't believe he's going to South Carolina, that's my best guess anyway, I am sure he is still feeling a ton of pressure from South Carolina, and no doubt one way or another, that's a factor in all of this. Either his decision not to be more public or his decision to want this to hurry up and be over with so they'll leave him alone or something along those lines. When you live in the hometown of an SEC university, the coach of that hometown school is kind of fighting for his job right now. My guess is his, you know, DMs, text message, whatever else, they are burning up all the time, especially given the fact that his son, Muschamp's son, plays on Birch's team. I'm sure that's a particularly challenging thing for Birch if he's trying to get away from the University of South Carolina.
Yeah, let's not forget that his teammate on the defensive line there at the Hammond School is already going to South Carolina, and that would have been, you know, the Gamecocks trying to pull in two really good. I mean, Alex Huntley himself had a Georgia offer, strong interest. And that's a top 15, top 20 defensive tackle in the country right there. I think the thing to think about there as far as South Carolina goes, and let me try to make it in Brandon Adams style form and fashion. I think Carolina is in the top four, but I don't think they're one or two there. So
yeah.
they got an uphill climb there if Carolina wants to keep him home.
I want to ask you about a couple wide receivers here in a moment. Before that, as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider update, got some really good news to tell you that the brand new fall menu is there for you at the Marlowe's Tavern, the neighborhood closest to you. And let me tell you something, this is good, good stuff. Some of this was sampled when we were at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven there this past week, like the warm brie fondue starter, which is made with a creamy brie, white wine served with pretzel bread, the blackberry mojito, which is a really, really cool cocktail. A lot of folks were asking for that to come back. It now has come back. Also, roast turkey meatloaf, which this time of year when it's kind of cold outside, that is a delicious meal option. The grilled center cut filet, the Blaze bone-in chicken, and the Southwestern Buffalo chicken wrap. All of that back, and in some cases introduced now on the brand new fall menu there at Marlowe's Tavern. You go to marlowestavern.com and find out more about those delicious menu items here as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with Jeff Sintel here today. Speaking of kind of social media announcements from UGA recruiting targets, four-star wide receiver Arian Smith, not so much an announcement, but maybe a little bit of a hint about kind of his deliberations right now, saying, picking the right school is harder than it seems. He says this on Twitter, and sometimes that's just a way of fishing for likes or retweets or just social media attention. If I was 17 or 18, I'd probably be right there the same way. But, I mean, do you have any insight into Smith's situation right now where, obviously, I think George would love to have a dynamic, speedy playmaker at the receiver position just given what's gone on in the field this year? Clemson has seemingly been there for him. I think Alabama's tried to get involved for Arian Smith, probably succeeded in doing so. What do you think things stand with Arian Smith right now?
Yeah, you got to throw Oklahoma in there too,
okay.
Brandon, because
okay.
We've heard that they have a lot of air in the ball over there in Norman, Oklahoma, so that's a great place for a receiver to go as they continue to stack up the players and prospects and elite receivers. I think Alabama is something there for him. The interest there where he would be able to play with Bryce Young, an marquee quarterback in the 2020 class, is something. There's always Clemson. Georgia has the unique ability to sell him as an equal Hartman type. And folks, I'm just going to say it. This young man will come in to Georgia or wherever he lands in college football as a faster prospect at least straight ahead track speed, time speed than Mecole Hardman, maybe even a step or two faster than Mecole Hardman. There are very few human beings on this planet that we can hold in that regard. He transferred from one school to another school in Lakeland, Florida. They're actually playing Armwood this week in the Florida High School State Playoffs, and that's the home of the 2021 number one receiver, our guy Hall. So that's an interesting matchup right there. But for him, track's going to be a component there because he wants to run track in college, in his college experience. And Matthew Bowling and him are great friends. That's an asset for Georgia in that recruitment, as well as the way Georgia wins and the way Georgia has consistently recruited him. That offer has been there in place for some time, where Arian Smith just got the offer during the back half, midpoint of this season from Clemson. But that's the school to really think about, because all these teams are wondering how many more receivers do they have left. Georgia would definitely find room in this class for Arian Smith should he choose to do so. But in the inverse direction of what we were speaking about with Jordan Burch there, man, Arian Smith is a guy that will very likely draw his decision out until February and the old school signing period for that one.
All right, that's good information to know. Appreciate that. And I guess let me just ask you a very blunt question here for a moment. Georgia's obviously not succeeding in the passing game here this season. Now, it hasn't really prevented Georgia from being a playoff contender, obviously based on the win against Auburn on Saturday, but there's no doubt that the passing game is lagging behind some of the other facets of this team in terms of productivity this season. And when it comes to recruiting, there are two ways to sell that, or two ways for that to be interpreted by recruits. There's the old mantra of, hey, here's how bad we need you, which Georgia may be indeed giving to Arian Smith. But there's also kind of a natural skepticism that forms around that of, well, my gosh, some of these guys they're not currently using very much were good recruits themselves, and what does that say about how they may use me? I mean, let's just have a very honest conversation right now, Jeff. Georgia's issues with the passing game, how much is that impacting recruiting right now?
Well, you know, that definitely segues into, you know, Theo Johnson information that's out there, the conversation we had with Theo Johnson. But I think recruits, especially in Smith's case, he can look and see that Georgia plans to use him as a Mecole Hardman type, and Georgia doesn't have a Mecole Hardman type on the squad this year. That stretch guy, that vertical guy that can kind of keep guys out of the box a little bit and take those deep vertical shots. Now, a lot of people, even the Dog Nation Forum, the fan base feels that they're happy with, you know, the quarterback taking the deep shot downfield, the vertical shot downfield, like the one to Dominic Blaylock against Auburn, because that kind of keeps defenses honest and keeps the safeties out of that already tight box. And in some ways, that might act like a Jake Cromartie punt, where he doesn't have to punt the ball 11 times. But with Smith, he can look at Georgia and see, very simply, the film of Mecole Hardman and what they did when they had an athlete like that. And when you can say, we don't have guys like you, especially with your skill set and your versatility and what you bring with your athletic ability, you've got something there. And with Georgia, what they're trying to do in the 2020 class is not just drop one Mecole Hardman type speed demon into the offense, it's two, because they already have a commitment from Corey Wren, who is, you know, super fast, 10.4 in the 100, 10.5 in the 100 meters fast, makes a lot of plays in the punt return game, and as a running back, and a veer offense in John Curtis in high school in Louisiana. The other thing to think about here that I think Georgia does say to recruits on the trail is look at the defensive side of the ball. We don't have a problem with putting young guys in to do what we do. Look at Trayvon Walker, look at Nolan Smith, look at N'Kobe Dean, look at Tyreek Stevenson. They want to add some more of that fire and ice to the offensive side of the ball. And if they have a player that's skilled enough and the best guy and is special, Georgia has no problems playing those young players because they feel the really great ones give them an edge on Saturdays. And the offense is what it is. You know, I kind of quickly point to everyone. Show me any school in the country that returns only one of their top eight receivers from a year ago, and let's see what the offense does. Georgia, Brandon, they only played two tight ends against Auburn on Saturday. John Fitzpatrick had played in every game this year. He didn't play against Auburn on Saturday. Those are some guys now in a huge game like that where Georgia tries to keep the tight ends on the field, but without the graduate transfer, Eli Wolf, I mean, that production in the run game, the blocking game, and then the passing game would be really limited right now.
Let me fast forward to 2020 here for a moment and stay on this same subject. I was shared a highlight of Marcus Roseme this past weekend. I know a lot of folks probably had a chance to see that now. He's done some nice things for St. Thomas Aquinas this year. And I guess, you know, you know, he's obviously a UGA commit. And when you think about Georgia desperately needing to upgrade its passing game, and, you know, the continued question of how much the receivers are part of that story right now, is Roseme the kind of receiver that can be an early contributor for Georgia next season? Because I don't care if Georgia wins a national championship this year, there's still going to be a need to just be better in the passing game moving forward. Is Roseme the kind of dynamic playmaker that can contribute in that role right away?
Yes. Yes. Yes, Brandon. I don't mean to be so abrupt and to the point, but yes, I think he can come in, and I think he can put some level of the same production that Dominic Blaylock and George Pickens has this year when he jumps into next year's offense, especially because in next year's offense, Marcus Roseme might be the number four or number five receiver, even when he gets going with a lot of guys that might come back. And everybody thinks about Blaylock, and, you know, he needs to be used more, but somehow Blaylock already has four touchdowns this year, and that ties him for the team lead. He's made the big play against Florida and Auburn, two huge rivals for Georgia, where he's came up when his best was required. And somehow, I know this is going to make Connor Riley smile behind the glass there for you, but somehow Dominic Blaylock's touchdown percentage is he's averaging a touchdown every 3.5 catches for the Bulldogs right now, and that's 14 catches, about 200-and-something yards and four touchdowns. And you look at Pickens, 300, he's got 30 catches, about 400 yards and four touchdowns. So if Georgia could add another freshman like that, especially a physical guy like Roseme, who already looks like he's got the body type to deal with the rigors, that really has a chance to help Georgia and help Georgia early.
One more thing here, Jeff, on the subject of these playmakers for future Georgia teams. Then I want to get into the visitor stuff for Georgia this upcoming Saturday. Caleb Williams, obviously one of the names we've talked about a lot for the 2021 class. I believe the priority quarterback target for Georgia, maybe over any class of, you know, any year, present or future, says he's going to be at LSU on Saturday for the game against Texas, or coming up for the November 30th game for LSU against Texas A&M. And in his tweet, he had the Joe Burrow wave going on there. Obviously, it's easy to connect the dots on this, that LSU has just been lighting it up offensively, and, you know, Joe Brady may be the most influential figure in college football for the 2019 season for the way that he's dramatically changed the passing game for the Tigers. It seems easy to assume that a guy like Williams could be swayed by that, and he's going to be on campus there on the 30th. What do you make of, I guess, Caleb Williams showing up at LSU, and is this a team to be taken seriously in the recruitment for Williams right now?
Yeah, very seriously, Brandon. I think you'll know a lot about LSU's plans and what they're selling Caleb Williams going forward, because they do have the dynamic offense, and it will the 30-year-old Coach Brady, will Joe Brady remain for a couple of years? Will somebody lure him away? You look at the numbers on him, and he's only making about $400,000 a year right now for the LSU offense. With LSU, they are clearly a big school. I've always thought, from talking to him and listening to what he has to say, that Georgia, LSU, Stanford, Oregon were the core schools, and Clemson's gotten into it as well with an offer, when they only try to offer like one guy every year. And I think Clemson gets complicated by the late offer and the fact that they will still have DJ Ungele there, and then that class who will be asserting himself as well. That's the number one five-star in the 2020 class. LSU is going to be very, very interesting, Brandon, because what's going to happen there with LSU is Joe Burrow will obviously move on to the NFL. But they're signing two guys in this class, the 2020 class. That's Max Johnson, the son of Brad Johnson out of Oconee County. And they're also signing T.J. Finley, another huge size, big, even a Jamarcus Russell-type athlete at quarterback, big arm, an Elite 11 passer in this 2020 class. They still have Miles Brennan there as well. It's going to be very interesting when I watch and we all see what LSU does with the 2020 class in terms of quarterbacks. Are they going to bring in another graduate transfer to kind of one-year rental that job so they would look a lot more attractive to Caleb Williams? The thing to know about Caleb, though, is you don't care who's there. I mean, if a Jake Fromm was still there at Georgia, if a Tua Tagovailoa was still there at Alabama, if a Trevor Lawrence was still there at Clemson, he doesn't worry about who's in front of him, who's signing with him, who signed a year earlier than him. He has the confidence and the moxie and the skill set to think that once he gets in there, he's going to control what he does He's going to find a way to climb that depth chart and put himself in a position to play.
It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with Jeff Sintel, and I'm proud to announce that Dog Nation's got a big event coming up at a Marlowe's Tavern near you. It's actually going to be, I believe, our biggest Marlowe's event of the year. It's going to be the week of the SEC Championship game. It's 6 p.m. on Thursday, December 5th. It's the Peachtree Corners location. Folks have been asking us to come back to Peachtree Corners, and we will be there on Thursday, December 5th. It's 5210 Town Center Boulevard. 5210 Town Center Boulevard in Peachtree Corners that night. Obviously, myself, John Stinchcomb, looking ahead to the SEC Championship, but we'll also be heading in to the start of the early signing period for the 2020 class there as well. That means Jeff Sintel going to be on hand as well. So, gigantic card that night for us at the Marlowe's Tavern in Peachtree Corners. Myself, the former UJL American John Stinchcomb, and a lot of recruiting intel from Jeff Sintel as we head towards the start of the early signing period. Jeff, it seems like every year it's this way, where December is the biggest month of them all around Dog Nation because there are postseason implications to be hashed out. There are recruiting storylines to be figured out. This year, no different. How much fun is that going to be at the Marlowe's and Peachtree Corners there leading up to the SEC Championship game to talk about it all?
Well, it's going to be great. Anytime I get to go to Marlowe's, and not only do I get to have those tasty entrees and those craft cocktails, but I also get to point to everybody and say, yeah, that's Brandon Adams over there. Yeah, that's the guy right there that knows Eddie the blind squirrel. Huh. And, you know, sometimes it helps when Connor and I are around both so we can form the selfie and the picture queue aisle to be able to talk to Brandon at one of those remote locations.
Not me, but Eddie the Blind Squirrel was a very popular addition to last week's lineup, but we'll replace Eddie with Jeff Sintel as we head towards the month of December. Jeff, one final thing before I let you go here as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update, and here's the reason why folks ought to be checking in at the forum at forum.dognation.com all the time. Pretty good visitor list there already starting to form for Georgia and Texas A&M on Saturday, in addition to having huge implications on the field. Big recruiting stuff here as well. Jeff, if you don't mind, I'm going to read a little bit from your thread. Warren Brinson expected to be there. Chad Lindbergh expected to be there. Tate Ratledge expected to be there. Justin Robinson, Zykevious Walker taking official visits. We know Walker's is a big official visit given the fact that he's going to commit the following week, at least to somewhere. We don't know if it's going to be Georgia or not. The quarterback, C.J. Stroud, going to be there. 2021 commit, David Daniel. Running back, Lavasier Carroll, going to be there. Lavasier Carroll going to be there. A couple big-time offensive linemen, Amarius Mims, Micah Morris expected to be there. Jeff, I know you'll be updating this list as more names get added to it, but man, oh man, with everything else going on, big crop of seniors and elite juniors to say goodbye to potentially, a lot of playoff implications for Georgia looking for another kind of resume bolstering win and recruiting stuff there as well. Athens on Saturday is going to be pretty busy.
Going to be the last one, and you know, that hashtag that you're proffering out, best for last, applies here. You know, I think the Lindbergh visit is very interesting because he's from the state of Texas, Brandon, and he earmarked that one to go see his future team, you know, come see them whip up on those Texas A&M boys. And I think a lot of people need to make sure that this is going to be a quality test for Georgia with the way A&M's playing. I know a lot of people let their thoughts get clouded a little bit by the struggle wins of earlier the year against Arkansas, but Texas A&M's playing a lot better football over the last two or three weeks or so. Kellen Mond is definitely the best dual-threat quarterback and just overall threat-level quarterback Georgia has seen all year. They've got a tight end that Brandon would love to see replicate some of those same big plays in the Georgia offense. They got a good young tight end to worry about. They try to operate out of that old-school pro set a lot, the split-back set, and you know, Jimbo has always been a fan of that, how he feels that you can get it done out of that offense as well as any spread concept or RPO concept you have out there. It's going to be something interesting for Georgia because there's two big official visits, and you know, a couple other things to just clue everybody in about on a Tuesday is, you know, Noah Sewell's team advanced to the state finals in Utah. That game's going to be on Thursday, I believe. And then once Noah Sewell gets through with his college process, then he gets through with his high school team and Orem High School's march to a championship, and he's going to turn his thoughts back to his college process. And some of the things that he's put out on social media is that his decision will come soon, and that seems very likely soon after his high school season and his football career at Orem High School is complete. Something to pay attention to as well as, you know, Theo Johnson, we wrote about him late last week. He just finished his Michigan official visit, and now he's going to take about five days off to really try not to think about recruiting at all and then he will come back to trying to get a way to make his decision. He told me last week that he has to have it done in his mind by December the 18th. That's the first day of the signing period. So, Brennan, check your watches, check your calendars. There could be the Hedges' top targets list. There could be six or seven names pulled off that board and decided over the next month now from where we are at right now.
Yeah, this is a fun time of year, Jeff. I love following all this kind of stuff. I appreciate your coverage to allow us to do that. Thank you for being here as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Look forward to being with you at the Marlowe's and Peachtree Corners coming up in the early December as we head towards the SEC Championship and the start of the early signing period. I'll see you tomorrow as part of Before the Hedges, and we just appreciate you being a part of the program here today.
All right, guys, check out the forum, check out the site. We should have a couple more recruiting updates going up on the main page as well today, too.
Good stuff.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really good stuff from Jeff Sintel. Always appreciate his insight here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door. And as we kind of roll through and take a cruise around the SEC, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean, let me remind you about what I think the biggest, the best amplification maybe yet to date from our friends at Royal Caribbean. I'm talking about the all-new Oasis of the Seas. They are making this thing bigger and better. It's debuting later on this month. It is going to be unbelievable. Ultimate Abyss, a plunge. You can take down the tallest water slide at sea, Playmaker Sports Bar and Arcade, Music Hall, the Lime and Coconut, just kind of some of the kind of entertainment bar options you have there. Also, there's the Bionic Bar, which is like a robotic arm type bartender. It's really, really amazing. You know, one of my favorite things to do is just to go to RoyalCaribbean.com and just kind of do a little window shopping for all the various ports of call and all the really cool amenities on all these ships. And really, it's also a great chance to kind of get in touch with a travel advisor and book the vacation that I know you need. It's been a long season for all of us, and this time of year is a lot of hard work as well for a lot of folks. So you're probably already dreaming about a vacation. Dream about your vacation at RoyalCaribbean.com, and while you're there, put your dreams into action and get in touch with a travel advisor. These vacations are cannot-miss experiences as Royal Caribbean turns 50 years bold this year. So since 1969, they've been redefining a cruise vacation, and it's even bigger and better as 2019 turns into 2020. So check out RoyalCaribbean.com for more on that. Jimbo Fisher yesterday, the Texas A&M coach, as we cruise around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean, had some interesting things to say about the rarity of a Texas A&M-Georgia matchup since the Aggies have joined the SEC. Jimbo says, it's just the way the SEC schedule is. I know they're looking at some formats going forward. Keep the main three. He means the opponents you need to play more than others. And then rotate the other five and all those things. I think it's good for your players eventually to be able to play everybody in a conference. I really do believe that. I think that's good to have that. You have to bend the stadium, those things. When you have big conferences that we have now, that's kind of the way that it goes. So Jimbo seemingly kind of advocating for a sort of a wider rotation of conference opponents, and I'm not necessarily against that. I'd love to see the SEC go to a 9-game conference schedule and have two rotational opponents in the SEC West. Just by the very nature of doing that, you'd play, you know, opponents a little bit more frequently by doing that. However, the one thing I think I seem to be a little bit of an outlier on, and you know, this is one of those things where reasonably people can disagree, but it seems like in the current landscape of college football, whatever is different and new is automatically treated as better. Somehow it's cooler that Georgia's playing Notre Dame as opposed to renewing a rivalry with Auburn. But for me, I kind of find myself feeling a little bit different about that. I think the fact that Georgia and Auburn have played each other 123 times every single year going back, you know, more than a century, I think that's actually pretty cool. And the way that Georgia has allowed itself to really establish a division rivalry with a school like Tennessee, for me, that matters. And obviously, you know, Florida and everything else there as well. Now, I think in any scenario where the SEC were to change its scheduling format, Georgia would probably keep playing Tennessee and keep playing Florida, I'm assuming. But there seems to be this idea that, hey, the games we've seen over and over again, they're no longer quite as good. But I think that the backstory, the long history, the kind of complicated history that a lot of these SEC rivals have actually makes playing those games each and every year pretty fun. Now, the problem is A&M doesn't really have those because it's only been in the league since 2012. Arkansas, only been in the league going back to the early 90s, doesn't really have those. But Georgia's got plenty of them. So this idea that we need some sort of radical realignment of the SEC schedule to kind of allow teams to play each other more frequently, I don't know that I'm as in favor of that as other people are, because the SEC is a unique league in that its two divisions, the East and the West, have always had their own separate identity. And I think those divisions mean something. They matter in a way that other conferences just simply don't. And the SEC, not just your big A-list rivalry, Iron Bowl, for instance, but your secondary rivals also kind of have their own storylines going as well. So I think that history and that heritage, I think the SEC would do right to preserve a lot of that. Maybe a ninth game in the conference schedule to play games like this more frequently, but not at the expense of some of the great games that the league plays each and every year. Speaking of one of the teams that Georgia plays each and every year, South Carolina, there is a weird storyline going on in Columbia right now. I'm going to see if I can tell this story succinctly. So a website, not one of the bigger websites that cover South Carolina, but a news entity in the state of South Carolina. I believe it's SC News Now. I believe this is the website. I may have that wrong, so don't click on that. But they get a quote from the South Carolina president who said that South Carolina's athletic director, Ray Tanner, had talked to Florida State about how Florida State raised the money for the buyout for Willie Taggart, who's obviously been fired as Seminoles coach. Well, later on, the university president had to backtrack on that and say, no, Ray Tanner didn't really talk to South Carolina. Now, when he said that, the university president of South Carolina did not say that he didn't say that. He just said that Ray Tanner didn't do it. The news entity that originally had the story, they're standing by the reporting, which means they must have an audio recording of somebody saying something that makes them feel like they don't need to backtrack on this. So we've heard that, you know, Will Muschamp has gotten votes of confidence and, you know, things of that nature. But apparently there is at least some rumblings that maybe behind the scenes, South Carolina has talked about a possibility of a buyout and how it raised some money to do so with Will Muschamp. So it sounds like the Muschamp story at South Carolina is not quite over yet. Let me do one more cruising around the SEC story, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. Scooby Carter, a top 100 recruit, defensive back, former four-star at Alabama, has entered the transfer portal. He kind of put this out there on Twitter, pretty matter of fact about what he's doing, moving on from Alabama. And we don't exactly know all the details on this, but he did not travel with the team to Mississippi State this past Saturday. There were some rumors and some rumblings that he may have been suspended on the basis of, I guess, some sort of missing class type thing or something like that. I definitely think that we are in an issue now where Nick Saban, just given his age and given how long he's been doing this and the kind of autocratic way in which he tries to rule, he may be having a hard time relating to some of the younger modern players and, frankly, having a hard time relating to how media covers college football in this modern age. However, the one area in which I'll defend Saban a bit, if you can't even suspend a player for missing class without him going into the transfer portal, then the college football model, as we know it, it's kind of broken, and it needs to be fixed. And I think there's a lot about these kind of transfer stories that may be complicated, and I'll certainly, you know, acknowledge that I don't know all the facts on this when it comes to Carter entering the transfer portal. But some of this stuff about some of these guys entering the portal during the season for kind of willy-nilly reasons, I'm not sure that's a great look for college football, but we'll follow it and see where it goes from here. We'll make that cruise around the SEC, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. All right, coming up here in a moment on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door, I want to celebrate some of the performances of the top dogs around the NFL. We'll do that here in a moment. Before that, though, more on Georgia taking on Texas A&M. And I was in the room on Saturday when Georgia coach Kirby Smart gave his postgame press conference after having won the SEC East. But I'm sure you noticed this if you listen to the press conference on our Dog Nation YouTube page. Smart continually pivoted back towards what he believes is a very tough game against Texas A&M. And I frankly believe it's a pretty tough game there as well for Georgia. And I thought yesterday Smart did a pretty good job of going into detail about what makes the Aggies tough and what makes this game a challenge for Georgia. A little bit unique to be playing what I think of as a good team this late into the season. Here is Smart kind of breaking down the scenario with Texas A&M.
Jimbo Fisher is an unbelievable coach. This team will probably be one of the most talented teams we've played against. We all know who their three losses are against. I feel like their three losses are against top 10 teams that are really, really good football teams. And they have an immense amount of talent. As far as their receiving core, will be one of the best we've played against. I think they got 8 or 9 starters back on offense. Really, basically every position outside tight end and a running back is coming back for their team. And when you watch them on tape, it really jumps off the film at you. So our kids understand the challenge we got. It's part of the grind in the SEC to be beat up and have to play another good football team. And that's what they are. They're coming to Sanford Stadium for the first time. So Jimbo and I have been on the staff together before. Obviously, Coley and him have been on the staff together for a while and got a lot of respect for the way his teams play. And they're really good and all.
So listen,
this will be a big test after an emotional win that we'll have to prepare really well for.
So listen, I think that this is a real opponent. You know, there's going to be a lot of pageantry about senior night. There's going to be a lot of recruits and everything else. But Texas A&M is no pushover opponents. One of the reasons why we're challenging Georgia fans to be at their best on Saturday, because we think that may be needed for the Dogs coming off an emotional road win at Auburn. Texas A&M is a part of the next step for Georgia towards hopefully getting back to the college football playoff. So I think Smart's description of A&M is spot on. No easy game, but a lot to be gained by Georgia if it is able to win on Saturday. Of course, we'll talk a lot about that in the days to come. For now, though, let's celebrate some guys in the NFL who've moved on to Sundays and are doing big things as our top dogs in the NFL. It's courtesy of our friends at Kroger. Let's mention a couple guys here, a couple running backs first. Todd Gurley, about 25 carries for him, 97 yards and a touchdown. He also added three catches for 36 yards in a L.A. win against the Chicago Bears on Sunday. Nick Chubb goes 27 carries for 92 yards. Now, third in the league with over 1,000 yards rushing on the season is Nick Chubb, continuing to be a big part of that Cleveland Browns offense. And, of course, Roquan Smith, this is, by my count, at least the third week in a row he's had double-digit tackles, 11 on the game. One of those was a tackle for a loss, also had an interception for the Bears on Sunday. So congratulations to all those top dogs around the NFL, courtesy of Kroger. And, by the way, speaking of Kroger, as we head towards the holiday season, don't forget you can get a holiday meal from Kroger without any kind of heat time, prep time. When you use the Kroger Chef, it gives you more time back. You can choose for ham and you can choose between ham or turkey, plus all the sides, including stuffing, rolls, casserole, mashed potatoes, pumpkin pie, and more. And it's just $70. You can order online, or you can stop by and see the Kroger Deli, call in over the phone. But just remember, if you want this for Thanksgiving, get an order by November the 25th. All right, so let's get ready to wrap up here today. And, of course, our eyes will be on the College Football Playoff Top 25 announced tonight. We'll see where George is on that. We'll see if Texas A&M shows up in the CFP rankings tonight, which would give, at least for now, Clemson a ranked win and also give Georgia a chance to add to its overall resume as well. And don't gloss over something I said at the beginning of the program as well, too, that by winning at Auburn on Saturday, Georgia dramatically increased its chances of making the college football playoff. You're already starting to see some of these rumblings, and we'll do some of this in our own Road to Atlanta video series, courtesy of Kroger as well. The LSU SEC championship, which is not official, by the way. LSU still has to beat Arkansas on Saturday. They are more than a 40-point favorite. But all of a sudden, that looms as a quite winnable game for UGA. So the stretch run for the Dogs should be interesting. Something else that's interesting, watching that Gatorator updater keep climbing. Eddie loves that. 1,116 days. That's how long since Florida's beaten Georgia. It's Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door.